If you drive, I suppose it'd be northwest over here on Highway 14, and then when you hit the Equipment Highway, Highway 37, if you'll turn right and head north towards Winnsboro, outside of Winnsboro, you'll come to a cemetery called Lee Cemetery, and if you'll turn right there and then drive it on that main road and take a left and go to the far left corner, the farther northern part of the cemetery, and you look there about the midpoint of the graves, you'll find my daddy's grave there. And that day, 37 years ago, as of last week, 37 years ago, that day that I stood at that grave as we put that coffin into the soil, was the culmination of one of the most important times in my life. It was a time of real focus and framing that helped crystallize to me what my life should be about. I think everything up until then was headed to that point. But it was there that I really was able to crystallize what my purpose is to be in life. And I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But the reason I'm saying that is because I think it has everything to do with the joy that we're able to experience. And we're in the book of Philippians in this series, and we're talking about experiencing true joy, real joy as Christians. And a couple of weeks ago, one of the things that we established was the fact that joy is not the result of external circumstances. Really, the circumstances that we're facing are totally irrelevant when it comes to the joy that we have in Christ. Circumstances are more connected with our happiness. And we do experience happiness, and we experience sadness, and we experience a lot of other emotions as Christians and as human beings. And that is a part of life. But happiness is not joy. And we're not called to be happy. And we're not promised that we're going to be happy. But we are called to joy, and we can experience joy in Christ regardless of any of the circumstances. And last week we talked about how Paul was writing out of very difficult circumstances because he was imprisoned. And so he was writing to these folks, and he was talking to them about the importance of their mindset. And we'll talk some more about that this morning as we talk about life's purpose. But he also talked to them about the importance of recognizing the affection and the emotions they have. And this is connected to the way they were created. God has created us, and we are like Him. And our God is an emotional God. And so as that is, we too as human beings, being made in His image, have emotions, and we experience emotions. And so when we talk about joy, I think it's important that we establish that we are not saying that emotions are unimportant, because they are important. They either propped us up or we're going to have to fight against what we're feeling. I, as a young preacher, really tried to distance myself from that understanding that we as people are emotions. And I understood that emotions are neutral, and what matters is not so much what you feel, but what you do with what you feel. And I'm going to share more on that again this morning, because I do believe that. But I'm afraid that I went too far in the wrong direction. I passed that and went to the direction that basically emotions are unimportant, and we are all about what we think, and life is about doctrine, and Christianity is about doctrine, and it's about understandings, about information, and if given the right information, people will do the right thing. And what I found myself experiencing was, as a young minister, I became very frustrated with the brethren. Because here I am preaching through the Bible, and I'm sharing doctrine, I'm teaching ways to think and giving good information, and yet there were times when God's people weren't behaving at least the way I thought they should behave. And so I would talk to them about that. And then one of the things I found out was, if you talk about something enough, the issue is not the issue anymore. Guess who the issue is? Me. And it was during that time period that I happened to check out from the public library in Abilene, Texas, a book by Dale Carnegie called How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, folks, I'm not here to tell you that's a Bible study book. But I am here to tell you, I think that book does a pretty good job about explaining things like a Philippians chapter 2 and how Jesus came to understand what we're understanding. And that's one of the reasons why he became flesh. And so if you read that book, it helps you understand what other people are experiencing and feeling. And the big aha moment for me was when he said, people are fundamentally emotional creatures. And the light bulb went off. And I thought, I think I just discovered one of my problems in life. I'm treating people like they're rational beings. Now, there is a part of rationality to them, but it ain't much compared to the other. Now, that's another study for another day. But I don't know if it helped me persuade people more, but it sure helped me to endure more and to be long-suffering more. And so what I would invite you to do is just to remember your brothers and sisters and all of humanity are basically emotional creatures. And once you make peace with that, I think you'll start having more peace in your life. See Philippians chapter 4, for example, when you talk about the emotions that people feel. Remember we talked about a couple weeks ago, the main reason Paul is writing this letter is he's addressing a problem. What's the problem? Chapter 4, verse 2, I plead with Euodia and I plead with Syntyche to agree with each other in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Now, what's he saying? He's saying there is division in that church. It's mainly two women, but it has evolved and people are taking sides. And that has robbed these folks of their joy. And I think Dale Carnegie would say, these are good women. They have been very involved in the gospel. They're doing the best they can, but it's still wrong. And they need to straighten this out. And the church needs to straighten this out. Which leads me back to where we are this morning as we enter into our passage. Having said what I said about emotion, there is still a scriptural understanding that we have a will. We have a place where we make decision. And that has to govern how we act. It cannot be how we feel governs how we act. It has to be that will that's infused with the Spirit of Christ that governs how we act. And incidentally, the world of counseling, the world of psychology and psychiatry, they actually agree with that. Not the part about the Holy Spirit. But the unanimous understanding is, no matter how long it is, whether it's a half a second or 10 seconds or 100 seconds, there is a place in our human brains where we can decide what we're going to do. Our emotions can inform us, but there's something here that can make that decision. And so none of us have excuse. Now, with that as the backdrop, let me read to you chapter 1. And I want to do a lengthy reading because we're going to focus in on mainly one verse here, but I want to give the context. Chapter 1, verses 15 through 26. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry. Incidentally, is this church experiencing some envy and rivalry within the congregation? Absolutely. That's what happens when people choose sides. But others do out of goodwill. And it's not just in the church. It's what Paul has experienced outside of this congregation in other places in the kingdom. The latter do so in love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. So what's the important thing to Paul? Whether a person's doing it for a good reason or a bad reason, I want to see Christ preached. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice. Verse 19, for I know that through the prayers and the help given by the Spirit, of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me, will turn out for my deliverance. Well, why is that, Paul? Because I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. You see what he's doing there? He's laying out his belief, his understanding, that no matter what happens to him, Christ can be exalted. And you're starting to get the hint, this is what's important to him, more so than his physical comfort, his physical location, his physical experiences. What's important to him is Christ and the exaltation of Christ. And to further emphasize this, he says in verse 21, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to go and live in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between these two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain, and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your joy in Christ Jesus will overflow on account of me." What he's saying is, I hope that what I'm demonstrating to you will bring you back to the importance of Jesus, to the importance of your calling, to the importance of your future, to the importance of your hope, and that will increase your joy and help you solve this relationship issue that you have within the church. But more on that in chapter 2, 3, and 4. What I want to focus in on is just one element, and I want to give you a word picture. If you're asked to speak at a high school graduation or college graduation, what are you going to speak on? Well, this has happened to me before, obviously because of the position that I have been in. You get these invitations. And I talked about various things, but one of the things I talk about from time to time is, especially to high school kids, what's going to be your purpose in life? You're just now getting grown up enough to where you can think for yourself, and now you're going to get opportunities to listen to all sorts of ideas and make a decision about how you're going to live your life. So what you're going to give your life to? And one of the things I do is I try to break it down into basically three things that should be the standard as you evaluate what your life's purpose is going to be. And I've been doing this now, well, since the events that led up to my daddy's death. And I still think it's a good way, a biblical way, to evaluate life's purpose. First of all, I think that these high school kids, college kids, or just anybody who hadn't really thought about life's purpose, and it could be of any age, he or she could be of any age, I think the life's purpose needs to be something that circumstances cannot affect. Do you really want to give yourself and become totally focused on making your life's purpose to be the fastest man in the world in the 100-meter dash? Well, that could be fulfilled, and you could become the fastest man in the world. However, if that is your life's purpose, then you've got several things you're going to have to contend with. For one thing, you've only got a short window to fulfill your life's purpose, and then you've got to live the rest of your life having your life's purpose fulfilled. Now what? But even on top of that, you're really setting yourself up for a lot of sabotage. What if you get in a car wreck and are injured permanently and you can't run anymore? There goes your life's purpose. I think about Julie Andrews. One of the things I love about Julie Andrews is what she did after she lost her voice. You know who I'm talking about when I say Julie Andrews? Mary Poppins, Sound of Music? You know, it's been, gosh, I think it's been 20 years now since she didn't lose her speaking voice, but her singing voice. And the amazing thing to me is I've never heard her utter a bitter word. Same person that I hear interviewed now for the last 20 years is the person I heard before that catastrophic event. I would have supposed, being in the entertainment field and such a wonderful singer, that might have been her life's purpose, but evidently it is not. And she still has meaning today And so I tip my hat to her. I think we need to be careful about choosing life's purpose, because this world, this falling, can sabotage it if it's not the right thing. So it needs to be some of the circumstances cannot affect that. It includes relationships. You ever know somebody whose life's purpose was their kids? Now you're talking about a booby trap. That's like having a Siamese twin emotionally. You remember Chang and Aang? You remember when you're a kid and you got the Guinness Book of World's Record, you opened it up and, you know, Barnum got this, they were from Siam, now Thailand. They were physically joined, and they traveled the world because it was amazing. How did these guys live? They shared organs, they shared this physical body, two bodies sharing these same organs, yet they married, they had children. I didn't ask, they didn't tell, but anyway, they lived their life, but yet nobody wants to emulate that. Matter of fact, we'll spend millions of dollars and risk kids' lives by operating to separate them. That's what Ben Carson made his name for originally, right? But you know, a lot of people live like that emotionally. They've got an emotional Siamese twin, and a lot of times they're kids. And so however the kids are doing, that's how they're doing. It's like they share these emotional organs. If the kids are doing great, they're doing great. If they're doing bad, they're doing bad. And if you really boil it down, sometimes that happens because their life's purpose is their kids. For some folks, it's their marriage. And now for great marriages. But what happens if that spouse passes away? We all know that can happen. See my mother 37 years ago. Well, if her life's purpose is her marriage and her spouse, then her life's purpose is over. Now, thankfully, I don't think that was the case with my mother. Is that the case with you? Secondly, your life's purpose should be something that death cannot stop. It should be something that death cannot stop. I am a fan of history, and I enjoy reading history, but every once in a while I remind myself, okay, very few other people like this. And a lot of people to whom I want to talk about folks that from history that I think they should be interested in, the people I'm talking to have no desire. And it could be someone that's monumental, like the Caesars, or someone more recent, like a president, but they just don't think about these folks. They live their lives without thinking about them. Basically, when these folks died, they may have had an impact a little bit longer, but they're forgotten. Some of the problems we're experiencing today in America is because people have forgotten the contributions that some folks who are long gone have made, right? There's a guy in the Bible that's not mentioned by name, but he's there. He's the Pharaoh, and he's actually a historical figure, Ramses. At one time, he was arguably the most powerful person on earth, and enough power and knowledge where people outside of Egypt in an age when it was hard to travel, people knew who he was. And yet his life purpose, himself and his glory, has been forgotten. You have to have a cartoon made for people to have any kind of concept of who this guy is, right? Prince of Egypt. On the other hand, there's a fellow who is willing to leave all behind, Moses, and surrender himself to God and God's purpose. And it is interesting that we still remember him way past his death. But I don't think it's because of Moses so much as because of the God he serves and the mission that God serves, that God offers for us to serve in. So purpose has to be something that can outlive death. Do you want to be like Rover when you die, dead all over, and that's it? Remember that old saying? Or, number three, do you want to live forever? Your purpose needs to be something that will be part of a cause that will live forever. Whose letter are we reading today? Paul's. Now, that's not because he was such an impactful guy at his time that he was on the cover of Rome's People magazine. Pretty much a remote figure, other than the trouble he seemed to be causing in the empire that brought him to Rome. Yet we're reading his letters today, not so much because of him, but because of the God he served, but because of the cause that he served. And it's one whose impact literally lasts forever. There are people who are going to live forever in the presence of Christ because of the mission that Paul filled and fulfilled in serving Christ, which takes me to verse 21. If you could take all we're talking about and put it into one verse, I think this would be the verse. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And going back to my daddy, I think one of the reasons why this has been so impactful to me was a lot was compressed in about a 6-week period in the events that surrounded my daddy's illness and death. You see, I was doing mission work in New Guinea, and I got word that daddy was sick with cancer and it was terminal. So I left and came back home. And at the time, the initial diagnosis was he had anywhere from six months to 2 years. But the cancer was so savage that it got into his liver about 3 weeks, and he died 3 weeks after that. Now, because my dad was good at business and a good steward, I was able to just leave my life and suspend it in the moment and become his caregiver. And so my mom and I actually had the privilege of being his caregiver. And this was before really we knew about hospice and everything. But I want you to know, it was a privilege. And it was difficult and it was sad because I loved my dad deeply. He was the greatest man that I knew. And he embodied everything that I thought was important, not just a strong Christian faith, but also just, he was just a successful man in all areas. That's why the last conversation that we ever had was so impactful to me, and why all this in Philippians 1 came home to me. There was a night as he was starting to really fade out, and you could tell he was dying. I mean, he had lost probably 60 pounds and looked like my grandfather, even though he's only 52. He looked like my grandfather had looked when my grandfather was in his late 70s. You could tell this is a dying man, and he could rarely talk. Cancer was just savage and destroying his body. And one night, it was a Tuesday night, he kind of got a second wind and some energy and was alert and wanted to talk. And I could sense that this is probably going to be the last conversation we'll ever have. And so in the midst of that conversation, one of the things I asked him, I said, Daddy, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently? That's the kind of question you always want to ask somebody in that kind of situation, if you can, if you got the permission to, right, the kind of relationship. And I could with him. And so I asked him that. And I'll never forget, he said, I really wished I pursued the mind of Christ more. And I was dumbstruck by that. Immediately, I thought about Philippians 2, which is what basically where he got that. But I thought that he always had. I mean, to me, he was the epitome of that. No, he wasn't perfect, but just exemplified the well-rounded salt and light Christian life. But now facing death, I think what he was saying was, as much as he had dedicated himself to the Lord, he really didn't see how important what is to come was because he was, like all of us, so caught up in the everyday. And now that he's seeing it, he's thinking, okay, I could have done this more for Christ and this more for Christ, and not necessarily going out knocking doors for Jesus, but just in every situation, being more Christ-like and living Christ. And that's where I really started to recognize what life's purpose was and what it was to be. And that's where Philippians 1:21 became my theme verse, and it is to this day. To live is Christ, and to die is gain. And I got to confess to you, part of the peace that I had from that was I recognized that he was about to go into another realm that was going to be better than the realm that I was in. And that gave me such peace and such joy. And it made it so easy for me to let him go, or at least easier. Because I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to play out, whether he was going to that place in Luke that where Lazarus is, and if it's there, or if it's just asleep in Christ, or if it's paradise. I wasn't for sure, but I just knew it was going to be better than where I was. And I could let him go to that. He was going to go in some way to glory. And that was better. Paul says that's better. That's gain. And I've never forgotten that. I think it's a good way to be able to live when you can say what most of the world looks at as the most frightening thing, death. You can look at it and say, that's what I'm waiting for. Whether you're 22, which is what I was there, because I started realizing I don't have anything to fear. And the sooner I get out of this world, probably the better, at least for me. Or whether I live to be 102. That's a peaceful thing to take with you. As a matter of fact, honestly, just sharing from my gut, the big struggle I've got out of that was such a horrible way to die. It wasn't dying, it was, I just don't want to experience pain. And so I thought, man, if I ever get killed in a car wreck, that's okay. As a matter of fact, I told my church in Shiloh one time when I was full-time preaching there, I said, I want to tell you something, because let me back up and give a preface. My brother-in-law was a counselor, and his dad died, gospel preacher died in his sleep. And it traumatized my brother-in-law. It took him years to get over that. And I tried to be gentle and say, you know, that's kind of what we all want. But it was so sudden for him. And part of it was he couldn't tell goodbye, you know, kind of like I'd been able to do. But that's a high price to pay, all that pain and suffering to give you time to say goodbye. So that's when I just started saying goodbye to everybody. And to let everybody say goodbye to me. And I'm going to give you the chance right now. I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and you can say goodbye. You're going to say your goodbyes right now. 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Goodbye, 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 goodbye. Okay, we have said our goodbyes. Now, if I get run over by a truck carrying banjos to Branson and I die instantly, I don't want you to go, oh, I never got to say goodbye. You got to say goodbye. And I said goodbye to you. And I'm painlessly going on to glory. I've got that part nailed. It's just the pain part that I'm having trouble with. Did y'all see where the guy that played the Black Panther died? And I got to tell you, that got to my gut. It gave me great pain. And here's what it was. Do you know he's been making these movies for years now, knowing they had colon cancer, having surgeries and chemotherapy, and going out and making them. And he didn't tell anybody. He was fighting for his life. His life was slowly ebbing away. And he was just doing his job well. Not complaining, not telling anybody. And then he dies, and everybody's like, what happened? And there's so many people that are shocked, had no idea. And I thought, okay, Lord, if I ever have to endure pain, help me do it like that. You know, left behind a wife and kids, my understanding. Oh, I don't want that. But Lord, help me. If I've got to experience pain, help me to do it for Christ. To live is Christ. And that's kind of what we're stuck in, folks. We're living Jesus. And we're going to talk about the how of that as we get into chapter 2, how to live Jesus, how to access that mind of Christ and apply it in our everyday lives. And I think we can make it simple, but I don't want to go into that today. The big thing I want to go into is, or leave you with, is just basically live Jesus and when will you die? How to live, want to die equals joy. How do you live? Live Jesus. Want to die? Because it's going to be better. And you know what that should equal? Joy. Because it's something circumstances can't change. It's something death can't stop. And the impact that you make will last forever. And obviously with yourself, because you're going to live forever with Jesus. Live Jesus, die winning, experience joy. Well, we're going to have a chance to sing and express that joy and that ministry of Jesus in our songs. We're going to have a chance to give Jesus thanks, to give God thanks in our time of communion together. So I want you to be mindful of that. Whatever years you have left, what are you going to give those years to? And how do you look to death? Let's stand and let's sing.